Hi everyone, I'm Felix from Rice University. Today I'm going to talk about our efforts on supporting distributed execution of smartphone workloads on loosely coupled processors. So today everyone is talking about energy efficiency, right? We have this electric car this morning. Probably the most energy sensitive systems we use every day is our smartphone. So we believe the key enabler for smartphone energy efficiency is energy proportionality. So the keynote speaker this morning talked about, like, when we walk in a room, the light is on, we walk out, light is off. That is energy proportionality in our daily life, right? If we look at the smartphones every day, when we are running these demanding applications, we really want them to deliver high peak performance. For example, gaming, video streaming, or browsing. So when the smartphone is idle, we want our smartphones to conserve as much energy as possible. So from a few watt to scale down to tens of milliwatt, so this is a 100x difference, right? This is a perfect example of energy proportionality. So how should we enable this? Fortunately, people already realize this challenge, and architecture guys trying to invent all sorts of techniques just to improve energy proportionality. For example, on a single processor, we have DVFS, right? Probably everybody is familiar with this technique. So the main idea is when the workload is light, you can scale down the main clock of the processor. So as a result, you can finish the same task, but by spending much less energy. However, there is a limitation in DVFS, as we know, right? Because you cannot scale the energy all the way down. So that's why there are more and more chip vendors to include different cores on a single chip. So usually, the examples, for example, ARM Big.Little, NVIDIA Tegra 3. So on this kind of chip, usually you have two different cores with different power performance trade-offs. And they will share cache coherent memory. So the idea is, when the workload is light, you can put the workload on the small core. So you can shut down the big core in order to improve the system energy proportionality. So here, we ask ourselves, is this good enough, right? Do we have a satisfactory energy proportionality on smartphone? So the answer is probably not, because the limitation here is the hardware cache coherence between these two cores. Without cache coherence, you cannot have a very dramatically different cores. So that limits the proportionality we can have. So some vendors adopt an even more aggressive approach. They put different processors on a single chip, and there is no cache coherence. For example, TI-OMAP 4 and 5. So by removing hardware cache coherence, right now, the asymmetry between two processors can be dramatically big. So as a result, you can run this very light workload only on this small processor, right? Therefore, greatly improving the energy proportionality. This sounds very promising. However, we have a serious system software challenge here. How should we exploit loosely coupled processors for smartphone workloads? And we have another big constraint, that is programmability. Because we know programmability is probably the most important factor to the success of any smartphone ecosystem these days. So for example, Google, Microsoft, and Apple put so much money and efforts just to make their smartphones easier to program. The legacy code base is huge. Over the world, there are 800,000 applications developed by 1 million application developers. Even when we look into system software, the code base is huge. In Android, for example, there are 1 million lines of source code. So in order to improve energy proportionality, probably we have to introduce some structural change to system software. However, we still have to preserve the legacy programming interface and the paradigm so we can maximize the reuse of legacy code. So in order to address these two challenges, first, we seek to understand the characteristics of smartphone workloads so that we know what kind of system support do we need in order to move these workloads around different processors. So in particular, we try to answer two questions here. First, what are the temporal and spatial variations in general purpose smartphone workloads? And second, how smartphone workloads are distributed between application and OS? So in order to answer these two questions, we did a few experiments all on Samsung Galaxy S2 plus Android Ice Cream Sandwich. So this is a very popular cutting-edge smartphone platform. Now, let me show you our benchmarks, right? So the first benchmark I'm going to show is very simple. We call it home idle. Basically, we keep the smartphone display on with showing the home screen here, right? Without running any other active applications. Occasionally, the user may interact with the home with the UI by swiping the home screen like this. So we run the benchmarks. We run a benchmark for 18 seconds. And during the benchmark, we monitor the CPU usage, basically system-wide CPU usage. So our first observation is very obvious. Workloads are time-varying. When the UI is idle, when there is nothing much to do, the CPU usage is usually below 5%, like during this period. However, when there are some user interactions, like the user is swiping, the CPU usage can spike like during this period. And even there are some clock animation on screen, right? You can see the CPU usage spike usually by a factor of 10 and 20. This is the first observation. Workloads are time varying. Now, what if we focus on a single thread? Right? Let's look at the CPU time used by the UI thread of the home screen. So in this figure, the CPU time used by the UI thread is the black part. And the CPU time for the rest of the system is the gray part. Right? So even within a single thread, we can see the workloads vary a lot, usually by a factor of 10 or 20 when there are user interactions. So that's our second observation. The same thread may experience varying workloads. So what if we further break down the CPU usage of a single thread? Right, let's break down into user space and kernel space. So in this figure, the blue part is the CPU time used by the UI thread in the user space. And the red part is that of the kernel space. So from this result, we can see the previous variation in a single thread is contributed by both the kernel part and the user part. So this observation, this fact is also important to some observation I will talk about later. Now, the first two observations are all about the temporal and spatial variations in smartphone workloads. Next, let's try to look at the OS services, right? How OS services are invoked by smartphone workloads. So in order to demonstrate this, we use two benchmarks. The first benchmark is still home idle, but here, in this case, we don't include user interactions. So you won't say the CPU usage spikes as we saw in the previous example. Home idle is a typical light workload. So usually, the CPU usage is always below 5%. The second benchmark, we call it browser. Basically, the user is actively using the mobile browser to surf the web. So as we can expect, browser is a typical heavy workload. CPU usage is usually above 17%. Now, we run these two benchmarks. And during execution, we record all OS functions invoked by either of the two benchmarks. So OS functions basically are the procedures that are inside the OS kernel to implement the OS functionalities. So we further group OS functions into a few standard categories and list them along the x-axis. For example, we have the functions belong to kernel scheduler, device driver, file system, network stack, all the way to the sound subsystem. So on the y-axis is the number of invoked OS functions. So inside one category, for example, inside this category, the gray part is the number of OS functions invoked by browser benchmark only. Remember, browser is a typical heavy benchmark. So the blue part is a number of OS functions invoked by the home idle benchmark only, which is a typical light workload. The black part, which is quite significant, is a number of OS functions invoked by both light and heavy workloads. So this naturally leads to our third observation. That is, the same OS functions, which is the black part in this example, may be invoked by varying workloads, both light and heavy. So if we further look down, how these OS functions are distributed across different categories here, we can see the distribution is quite like spread out across different categories. So this gives us the fourth observation, that is, workloads may invoke diverse OS functions across different categories, right? This is even true for the light workload. For example, the home idle benchmark here will invoke some device, block device drivers or some just the security functions. Now, with the observations in mind, we ask ourselves, what kind of system support should we provide for executing this kind of workloads? Right? What are the design implications? So for user thread first, because workloads are time varying and even within a single thread, we should really enable one thread to execute on different processors during runtime. And remember, we have to maintain the existing program structure of single thread. We cannot afford to, you know, re-implement or overhaul existing thread because there are just so many of them in the system. Let me give you a simple example to illustrate why should we enable one thread to use different processors. So let's see, let's still look at the home idle benchmark, right? Look at the UI thread of the home screen. So when there are not many user interactions, we should execute the UI thread on the small processor, right, to improve energy proportionality, like in the blue part of the figure. When there are some user interactions, when the workload is high, we should execute the same UI thread on the big processor, right, just to be like very responsive. Once the UI events are handled, the same UI thread should resume its execution as soon as possible on the small processor. So the big processor could be powered down just to improve energy proportionality. So that's an example why we should enable one thread to execute on different processors. So we also see some important design implications on OS functions, because the same OS functions could be invoked by both light and heavy workloads. We should enable OS services to be executed on different processors. So when the workload is light, the OS service could be executed on a small processor to have a higher energy efficiency. So when the workload is heavy, the same OS service should be executed on a big processor to deliver high performance. And also, because workloads may invoke diverse OS functions, we should provide this kind of system support for a wide range of OS functions, right? Instead of just handcrafting a few specific OS services. Remember, in doing this, we still have to preserve a single system image to the applications, because we really don't want application developers to deal with separate multiple OS instances. Now let me give you another example to illustrate why should we have this unified system image. So let's talk about Instant Messenger, right? See, we have an Instant Messenger which is launched due to the user interaction on the big processor. So as long as the Instant Messenger is launched, it will create some socket with the OS on the big processor. Later, when there are no user interaction, UI is idle, the workload is light, we should definitely shut down the big processor to have better energy proportionality. However, the application, the Instant Messenger, still have to occasionally read from the socket, right, just to get some state update from the network. So in this example, application will expect the socket S to be valid across different processors. This kind of abstraction is very important and can only be enabled by a unified system image. So that's why we should have a unified system image. So in order to address this design implications, we propose our solution, Cage. Cage is a combination of runtime library and OS support. So here, let me first give you a very high-level overview of the OS Cage. So let's assume we have a smartphone platform which has two loosely coupled processors. One is big, one is small. There is no hardware cache coherence, but they can access the same physical memory. So on top of each processor, there will be an OS component provided by Cage. And both OS components will talk to each other, cooperatively implement OS services. Together, they will present a unified system image to the applications. Applications will be provided by application developers, of course. And their source code will be linked to the Cage runtime library. Basically, the runtime library will provide, will implement necessary system support to execute user thread. It will also bridge the application thread and the Cage OS. Now let's look at the application structure. Let's zoom in that part. So with Cage runtime library support, an application is free to launch a thread on either processor, big or small. Under the hood, whenever an application launches a thread, the Cage runtime library will create a replica of the thread on the other processor. So during execution, one thread and its replica can voluntarily switch their execution to each other, basically yield their execution to each other. And the yielding points are defined by the application developers in the source code and are dynamically chosen by OS, runtime, and the user hints. So that's about the application structure. Oh, so here we preserve the legacy program interface of the user thread. So we can, hopefully, we can reuse a large portion of legacy application code. So let's look at the inside the Cage OS. See, on each processor, we have a local kernel, which is very compact and only abstract the hardware features. On top of the local kernel, Cage OS will create per processor replica for all OS services, as long as the service is not processor specific and deserves distributed execution for energy proportionality. So all these OS replicas will cooperate with each other and implement the OS services. What is more important, Cage will provide a framework to automatically manage state consistency for replicated OS services. As a result, we should be able to reuse a large portion of legacy OS code here. Of course, together, all OS replicas will provide a unified system image to higher-level applications. A few final words about open questions and plans here. Of course, the core question here is how to keep state consistency for this replicated OS services and to keep the overhead low. We believe the key here is to limit inter-processor concurrency, because inter-processor communication in loose coupling case is way more expensive than cache coherence case. Right now, we're actively working on an implementation. Our implementation is based on TI-OMAP4, which is a cutting-edge smartphone system on chip. So inside of this chip, there are two types of different processors, and they don't share cache coherent memory. So we have two local kernels up and running on each processor. They have their own memory allocators. They can allocate memory pages independently. But they still share, both kernels will still share the same virtual address space. So we believe the memory allocation mechanism will be a very useful substrate for higher level OS services. I don't think I have time for it to work. Let's skip this. So to recap, our holy grail here is to greatly improve energy proportionality for smartphone workloads. Our work is driven by two observations. In smartphone architecture, there will be more and more loosely coupled heterogeneous processors. And smartphone workloads may have high variations in both application and the OS. We are facing two unique challenges here. First, we have to exploit the heterogeneous loosely coupled processors for smartphone workloads. And second, in doing so, we still have to maximize the reuse of legacy code base, which is already huge. Our solution is Cage, which is a suite of runtime library and OS. Cage will replicate user thread execution across different processors. Cage will also replicate OS functions across different processors. And what is more important, to automatically manage state consistency for the OS services with a very low overhead. Thank you.
Hey, Jidupadi, MSR. Nice talk. So a couple questions. You mentioned something about the app developers have to do some extra work.
Yes.
What do they have to do?
Yes.
That
so
for disappeared from the talk somewhere.
Yeah. Let me scroll back to this slide. So basically, our current design is that the application developers still have to define the yielding points, right? In the possible yielding points in the source code, like what are the possible points to switch the processor? So that's something they have to annotate in the source code. Because we cannot, so the loosely coupled processor will not allow you to do transparent migration. That is very unlikely.
I see.
Because you have to move the stack from the stack to the other processor, which is maybe of a different ISA, something like that.
Okay. So that leads me to my other question, which is the small processor that you have, the low power processor.
Yeah.
It seems like, at least in this talk, you treated it as merely a scaled-down version of the big processor. But the reason it's low-powered is because it doesn't do certain things, right? Like, for example, the Little Rock project.
It's an 8-bit
processor.
Yeah,
you cannot execute 64-bit additions and multiplications on it. How do you handle that?
So basically, I think your question is about why the small processor can save power. Is that true?
And then the second, if it is doing so by excluding certain features,
right?
How do you maintain?
Right. Yeah. That's a good question. So I think why the small processor can save power is first because there are many design possibilities, right?
Sure.
You can have some simpler microarchitectures, right? So you can execute some workloads that does not require this advanced microarchitectures. Also, you can have much lower clock frequency. So you can finish the same task, but with lower performance.
Yeah.
That's one thing. How to handle the difference? I think the small processor should run a subset of the functionalities there, right? So whenever you hit some boundary, so the small processor say, okay, I cannot do this. Maybe you should fail the syscall, return some E again result, so the application may be able to restart the syscall there. So the thing is, we really want to be transparent, but sometimes, we may not be that transparent.
Okay, I have one more question, but I'll leave it then.
Okay, let's take another one. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Maria Kazanjeva from Stanford University. Thank you for your talk. I think there's an inherent danger when you start talking about improving energy proportionality and then immediately switching to just talking about the CPU, because especially with cell phones, I have the feeling that a lot of time my juice is going elsewhere, not to the CPU, right? You always have to pay the cost of the screen, for example, if the user is actually using the phone. And so I know this is a workshop, so it's preliminary work, but I'm curious, do you have a sense as to how much I can expect to save? So how much is the CPU responsible for the overall consumption of my phone, given that I look and usually it's screen and wireless, sucking up everything. So what can I expect, maybe 1% versus 10%, even just kind of an order of magnitude?
All right, it's not that small, I think. Okay, this is a very good question. I think basically there is a paper, robust paper from previous hot power, right, talking about the on-call power, basically the power consumption in other system components other than the processor. So you may have wireless, display, something like that, right? So the processor actually, I think, spend a lot of power in the system, probably 13 to 14%. I don't have data to back up that. But still, I think our principle here could be applied to other system components, right? We could have heterogeneous wireless interface to have this energy proportionality. But the key challenge here, most of the system state probably are in the processor, and in the main memory, right? So for wireless interface, you may not have that much state information. It will probably will be easier for you to switch from one powerful interface to one energy efficient interface, right? But for the processor, it may be more challenging. So hopefully our principle, our result here can help, you know, other directions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, nice talk. This is Devish from NC State University. So this is similar to, you know, OS offloading, which architecture people have been exploring for a while, right? So my concern is that you have these OS calls once in a while or, you know, repeatedly, and you go back to your another core and then come back, right?
Yeah.
So maybe the overhead of migrating is, you know, just going to, even if OS services are more suited for low power cores, just the migration overhead would probably offset everything. Right?
Actually, I have a backup slide for that, I think. Let's see. Will cage result in a sluggish system, right? We have a paragraph to describe the migration overhead in a paper. You can check it out. So we do some back of the envelope calculation. We think, like, we estimate the latency from, for example, from the big core to the small core is like probably 1 or 2 milliseconds. That's our estimation. Compared to the user perception threshold, which is around 20 milliseconds, we think that's acceptable. But still, it's up to efficient state consistency scheme to keep the overhead low. So on the other hand, from big core to small core is not that important because your system is going to sleep. You can do it like fairly slowly.
Yeah, but how about how long I was comparing it with the OS call itself. You know, the OS call itself may be so short that compared to migration overhead that migrating again and again, user may not percept it, but your energy efficiency wise, you may.
I think the frequency for you to switch between the cores should be limited. It's not like in a cache coherence case, you can like migrate frequently. Probably here, I think it's in a few sec, you may be able to switch once.
Switch once, right. Okay.
Yeah.
And another related question is, usually low power cores are offer different ISA than, the high power cores or high performance cores. So probably that would make it even more difficult because you would go from x86 to maybe, ISA. Then how do, so users will have to rewrite or you will do just-in-time binary translation?
Right, sure. I think probably, yeah, that is very challenging, right? So in order to have this dramatically different cores, you may face different ISAs. But right now, probably we can, for like shorter goal, we probably can target like one core, the ISA of one core is a superset of ISA of another core. So that's also an approach adopted by Intel. So we have some papers talking about how to provide system support for that. Also, this is an approach by ARM, right? The Cortex A9 is the big core, M3 is the small core, and M3 has a subset of the A9.
All right. Nice talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.